Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, June 21st, 2016. With me today, I have John Martellaro. And how are you, John?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me on the show. And good morning.
Good morning. And Brian Chaffin, how are you?
I'm doing very, very well. I appreciate you asking, and I hope that you're doing well, too.
Golly, yeah, I'm doing pretty darn nifty. Wow. Okay. Atlassian is our sponsor, so that's pretty awesome. And I guess we'll see if they're still our sponsor tomorrow. Anyhow, first thing I thought we could talk about is going to the concert. And by going to the concert, I mean Alicia Keys specifically. She's doing something that's relatively new. She's not the first person to do this, but it's kind of a big thing with her. If you go to one of her concerts and you have your smartphone with you, they make you put it in a little pouch that they lock. You cannot open. So you cannot use your phone at all during the show.
But if you keep it with you.
Yeah, but you keep the pouch with you. And if you need to get into the pouch to use your phone for any reason, you leave the concert venue, and then the people that are running the show, they can unlock the pouch for you, so you can take your phone out and you can use it. But if you're going to go back in, it goes back in the pouch and it gets locked, and you can't get in. And this was kind of new to me, but it's been a little while since I've been to a concert. What do you guys think about something like
First,
this?
First, it's absolutely crazy. It's insane. People need access to their phones for family emergencies. It's the height of arrogance to think that the show is more important than emergency situations that people might encounter, because you have a big crowd like that. Somebody's going to have to contact or be contacted by their family member. I think there's going to be a big business for people on the side, a little booth there selling X-Acto knives for a dollar.
So is this to keep phones from being a distraction, or is this to protect her intellectual property?
This is to protect her intellectual property. So no photographs, no video, no audio recording.
Listen, I tend to drift quite strongly towards the idea of not stealing stuff and people not pirating and people not being freeloaders and people not feeling like they're entitled to the hard work of other people, right? I actually have very, very strong feelings about this.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Brian.
And we're outside the mainstream on that. Most, you know, the especially young people don't think anything whatsoever about pirating anything and about sharing whatever they want to whomever they want. But the thing is that this particular boat has sailed from the bay. That boat has sailed. Yes. She's nuts if she thinks that she can stop people from sharing her concerts, because that ain't the way the world works anymore. And the lack of gods forbid that someone ends up having some kind of an emergency that they could not address because their phone was in a pouch in an Alicia Keys show. I don't know. She is the modern day equivalent of the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike.
And for those of you that don't know what that is, this is why we have Google. But the notion is the little boy puts his finger in the dike because there's a leak. And so he's keeping the water from coming through the dike and flooding all of Holland. But he can only plug one hole, and there are plenty of others.
Yeah. And I personally, there is not an artist that I would go see and subject myself to that kind of treatment out of principle. I just would not go. And if I got there and they tried to do that, I would.
I'd want my money back.
I would want my money back. You might not be able to get it, but I would certainly leave. Yeah, this is not the right approach.
I remember a discussion a while back, if I remember correctly, that the whole idea of these concerts was to get people there in person to enjoy the experience of being in the crowd rather than watching it remotely. That there's value in being with the other people, and you're there and you've paid your $100 to get a ticket, so there you are.
John, I like how this is like something that you've read about.
I know. I seem to recall we had a discussion a year ago or so on TVO about this or something. And then the idea was that's the source of revenue where we're transitioning to the live experience. So now they're getting their $100 per person for X thousand people, but that isn't enough, it seems.
So. Well, the economy of the music industry has certainly been shifting to once again emphasize the proceeds from live shows as being a major revenue stream. I don't think that's what is behind this particular move from Miss Keys.
Wasn't it even you who said that when people promote these videos, it just creates more demand to get into the live concerts?
It absolutely does.
Share the videos.
And no one, I mean, well, show me the cell phone video that's going to, you know, be the reason why I don't buy right. some music or stream it. Through some kind of service where the artist is making a pittance.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And most people have no idea how to hold a camera for video, so they hold their smartphone in portrait mode as opposed to landscape mode.
It's easier to hold it that way. There's a reason for that.
I know it's easier to hold that way, but it's still wrong.
It's wrong if you're interested in producing something that is...
not crap.
Most pleasurable to watch.
Yes.
So, and be interested to see if the event managers have some concrete evidence that the sharing of these poorly done videos full of vibrations taken in portrait mode are actually decreasing the demand for people to come to our live concerts. Or is it just an emotional thing? We're going to do this because we can.
I don't know if it's so much an emotional thing as it is an attempt to protect intellectual property. In this case, the artist's performance.
Yeah, but it sounds like a soundbite approach to doing it. To me, anyway.
Yeah. I think she's being a bit of a control freak. And you know, from a disturbance standpoint, by the way. I'm far more in empathy with the idea of keeping people from talking during a show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm far more empathetic with that idea, but
we can't put bags over everyone's head before they go into a show.
Well, and not only that, but you know, now your phone's in a pouch and it's ringing because someone's calling you and you can't answer it. So
right,
and you can't turn it down.
You know, there could be another thing we haven't thought of. I haven't read the full article yet, but there could be an optical effect. You know, these flashes work up to a range of about 2 or 3 meters, maybe 4 meters. And beyond that, the flashes are not very effective in illuminating the target. So you see an Olympic event or a football game where people are shooting at night, say in a football game or a halftime event, and you see the stands are full of flash events, but they're not really illuminating the field. It's those megawatts of lights that are illuminating the field. And so it's really quite useless to use your flash in most situations beyond, you know, 3-4 meters. But the optical effect that it has on the stage member is still significant. And when you've got 4,000 people in the audience randomly igniting the flash, and if they're shooting a still instead of video, it could be an amazing optical distraction and stress on the stage members.
Sure. And I've actually been blinded on stage by a flash and almost walked off the stage. However, I don't think that's the reasoning behind this. I think this is about not wanting people to record.
Yeah.
The guy that invented the bags that they're using, his feeling is that people should go to concerts and just watch the show and not have their phones out, period.
Harking back to yesteryear.
Yeah. So for him, it was all about, we just shouldn't see phones at shows. That's all. So if we force everyone to lock them in a bag, then they can't have their phone out, and it'll be a better experience.
I believe the term for that is
get off my lawn.
Brittleness, inability to adapt with the times.
Yeah. Anyhow, Brian, it's clear that you and I have no interest in going to a show where we're going to be forced to lock our iPhones into a bag. John, you don't sound like you would be too hip on this either.
Mm-mm, nope.
Listeners, I'm curious. Do you think this is a good idea or not? Let me know. You can hit me up on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can shoot me an email, observations@macobserver.com. And of course, you can leave comments in the show notes. And I want to know what you think. Is this a good idea or not? And did I mention earlier we have a sponsor? I believe I did. I did, because then I was also concerned that maybe they're just done with us after our introductions today. That sponsor is Atlassian, and you should check them out at atlassian.com, and that's atlassian.com. The reason you want to check them out is because you'll probably be surprised when you see that apps that you're either familiar with or are using came from them, and you just didn't realize. What they make is a suite of apps that work together so that you can create a workflow that is productive and efficient for whatever it is that you need to accomplish. And they have tools like Jira, which lets you do project management for task management for your projects. There you go. And then they have tools like Confluence that lets you create and then share content that's part of the projects that you're working on. And then there's Bitbucket, so that if you're doing coding, you have a repository for all the code elements you're working on. And then HipChat, so that you can interact with each other in real time, no matter where you are. And all of these tools fit together seamlessly, so you can use what you need, or you can use all of them. And regardless of how you need to use them, they just work together really well to make your job easier. And that's a pretty awesome thing. So go check out their products at Atlassian.com, and thanks for being our sponsor. Okay, so the other thing that I wanted to talk about today is a new bill that is proposing back doors into messaging apps that use encryption
Russia.
Dude, you just took the punch out of my delivery.
I thought maybe you were just not setting it up right.
Man,
sorry.
Anyhow, it's in Russia, whatever, blah blah blah, John.
Just trying to be helpful.
Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
Anyhow, so there is a bill that's going through Russia's Duma, and the purpose of this bill is to force companies that make apps like WhatsApp and Telegram and that would also include Apple's Messages to put a backdoor in for anti-terrorism uses, so that the Russian government and Russian law enforcement will be able to get inside the communications that people have inside these apps and see the contents. And this has already been approved by the Committee on Security. And yeah, so we're looking at a potential law here, at least in Russia, that would do what has come up a few times in the United States, but still hasn't actually been successful. And that's to force us, meaning app developers, to put backdoors into our encrypted communication apps.
You know, there's a, apparently there's a template here. There's a political template that's being formed. And this looks like it's just taken right out of the United States playbook. In the article we're looking at, it says Russian Senator Yelena Mitsalina argued that the new bill ought to become law because she said teenagers are brainwashed into closed groups on the internet and then murder police officers. And we need to be able to, you know, discover that and listen in on them so we can stop the murdering of these police officers. So the script goes like this. First, you isolate and identify technical ignorance on the part of the population. Then you propose a law that allows you to snoop on people. And then you give the murdering of your citizens or police officers as a graphic example of why this law is necessary. And because the people are not able to technically argue with you, they'll shrug their shoulders and go along with law enforcement. We went down this road with Apple and FBI just a few months ago, but it looks like Russia's decided they're going to try the same trick.
So it seems. Yeah, and they're also talking about possibly pre-filtering messages. And by that, they mean you send a message, and before it actually gets delivered, it gets approved by the Russian government.
Yeah, so authoritarian wet dreams here. I would like to point out that if you support the idea of governments having backdoors into encrypted communications, that you have a friend in Russia. And of course, you have a friend in China. China would absolutely love to be able to mandate the same thing. So would every other authoritarian regime led by a strong man, which could theoretically include the U.S. After the next election. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, so this really concerns me, because the possibility of a major government creating a major security, well, I was going to say loophole, but really they just want to punch a hole right through security and privacy and encryption. This is really concerning, because once you get one country that passes something like this and can effectively enforce it, then the dominoes start to fall and other countries will do the same. And what happens? So if Russia passes this and it becomes law, do app developers stop selling their apps in Russia because they don't want to put a backdoor in?
Well, so, I mean, the same thing that we've talked about would be the inevitable result of the U.S. trying to do the same thing would happen in Russia, just in the same way, is that people will flee to encrypted platforms that are outside of government control. This is just as stupid for Russia to pursue as it would be for our government here in the U.S. I mean, it's encryption is here. Encrypted systems, encrypted messaging systems are a cakewalk to develop at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia can't stop it any more than the U.S. can.
No, I don't think they can.
China would have easier time of stopping it because they have the Great Firewall.
Yeah, that's true.
But the rest of the world is not going to. But even China can't stop it. China would be able to crack down on many people who try to avoid government control if they were to head down the same path. But even China can't actually stop it. They would just have a better time of it than Russia would or the U.S. would. I mean, encrypted systems are here. They're not going away. And by taking them out of the hands of law-abiding citizens, you will send law-abiding citizens outside the law, and those who are not law-abiding will absolutely and positively use systems.
There's an economic effect here too, Brian. You know, money flows across borders pretty easily in either official or semi-official ways. So with Russia's economy not in real great shape, If app developers pulled out, the local app developers were the only ones who were doing this, and they said, we don't want to write these apps, the whole economy based on human communications would start to fracture even more. And in this, for the sake of some piecemeal law enforcement, Russia would see its digital economy start to move in the wrong direction. And people would be buying products from other countries, and money wouldn't be flowing in the right direction in Russia. And so there are consequences to this.
A law like this would affect Apple and the mainstream platform providers. I mean, it wouldn't really affect, it's not going to affect many individual developers. And people wouldn't be able to sell systems very easily.
Would it be illegal to buy an iPhone in Russia then? Because it would be a hot item.
No, I would imagine that Apple would simply, Apple could be required to stop carrying any in Russia, stop carrying any third-party messaging platforms that didn't provide said backdoor, and Apple would probably be forced to shut iMessage down in Russia.
Yeah, they would. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't buckle to this. They would just say, we're not going to do business there with that app.
Right.
Right, because if they did punch that hole through the encryption, it's a hole that anyone can go through, not just Russia.
Yeah, I don't see Apple buckling under on this.
Yeah,
I don't think the Russian politicians have. You know, I talked about the template at the top of the segment about the political template that they exercise, but part of the corollary of that template is the politicians who follow it don't often themselves understand the technology sufficiently to see what the unintended consequences are of their template.
Yep. And so really, Brian, I think you nailed it. What we're seeing in Russia is just a mirror of what we've been seeing in the United States. And hopefully this bill will not pass because it's going to turn into a hot mess for Russia and encryption and the messaging app community.
Yeah, it's going to make the Russian government look extraordinarily stupid. And I kind of actually wish they would pass it because then we could kind of bypass the process of us having to learn this lesson the hard way because we can just watch what happens in Russia. Maybe that would actually teach some of our more idiotic lawmakers a lesson and show even those people who would willingly trade this particular aspect of liberty for the illusion of security might teach them a lesson too.
We can live in hope. And on that happy note, we are out of time. So, Brian, thank you so much for being here today.
Even though I'm kind of cranky and cantankerous,
I love you anyhow. It gives you character.
Excellent.
And John Martellaro, thank you for being here.
You're very welcome, and I love you too, Brian.
Oh, hugs for everyone.
Yeah.
Atlassian, thanks for being our sponsor. Head over to their website, atlassian.com, and check out their collaboration and project management tools. They're pretty awesome. And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.